and a very good morning, unless you're in a car. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. I'm Ian Grant, and this morning I'm joined in studio by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. And we would like to welcome you in today. Just a reminder that financial opinions, recommendations expressed in the show, solely those of the commentator, not necessarily those of Hollis Wealth, News Talk 1010, or Bell Media. Hollis Wealth, a division of Industrial Alliance Securities, Inc., member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund, and the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. Alan Small Financial Group is a personal trade name of Alan Small. Please consult your investment advisor for financial advice. Alan, good morning. Welcome in. How you doing?
Yeah, a little tired today, trying to get into with all the rush out there. This is
the day every single year that on this show, I'm never sure if we're doing the show live, if we're doing it by phone, because inevitably it is
there are a lot of people
crazy
out there.
And it's one of two camps. You're either running in it and think this is a great idea, it's a great cause, and it is a great cause.
Absolutely.
Or you're stuck in the car swearing to God you're never going to go near another Scotiabank as long as you live.
So yeah, it's busy. There are a lot of people out there, and great cause, of course, but definitely a lot of road closures.
We apparently have an election coming up tomorrow. Tomorrow night's my Super Bowl. It is. I mean, I'm not into sports at all. Tomorrow night, I'll be sitting there, three TVs, computers, iPads, everything going, is watching results coming in. I love it. You?
I will be watching, definitely. I will be watching. I must admit, my son has a hockey game earlier in the evening, but I will be back and watching after that.
Well, I know, but you've got to kind of pad time until, well, in the East Coast, but 8 o'clock is really the
That's true.
Key we moment.
Get all the results, yeah, and see. And of course, for me, take a look at the markets and see. I don't anticipate any, really not much of an effect. Obviously, we won't see it overnight because definitely won't affect the futures market, which is the U.S., but perhaps come to Monday morning, we will see something in the markets, perhaps reflecting whoever's the winner.
Yeah, I want to suggest, by the way, if you've never tried listening to the radio while you do it, a lot of people go to the ball game and listen to the commentators on the radios at the same time. If you've never done that, try it out, because radio can just act a lot faster than TV. We don't need to get cameras there. We don't need, you know, we can basically stick a microphone in front of somebody. So it does tend to be a completely different scenario. So like I said, I've every media going on. How much of an impact are these election results going to have, and does it really depend on what kind of government we get tomorrow? Because nobody can agree on that.
Yeah, and you know, and it's a good question. And I think overall, depending on the government we do have come Monday, whether it's a minority, majority, conservative, liberal, obviously it looks like it's going to be one of those two. You know, overall, I don't think it's going to play out much for the markets. Perhaps we could see a movement in the currency. Again, as we talk about, I guess on a weekly basis on the show here, our markets tend to move more with the markets outside of Canada, fortunately or unfortunately for us. So if something were to come up Monday morning on trade, China, U.S. trade or something along those lines, I think that would probably take the markets or move markets a lot more than the result of our elections. But I think there can be specific investments or specific companies or corporations or stocks that could move depending on, you know, which party wins. And again, if it's a majority or minority, right now I guess it's looking more like the minority government, but we'll have to see.
If it's a minority liberal NDP government, for example, as opposed to, you know, a conservative government, do the markets look at that and you know, I'm going to go deep anyway. If you're aware that whoever is in office is going to spend like drunken sailors as opposed to some kind of fiscal responsibility on the cash, do they go to that level, or is it all just 50,000 feet, we'll deal with it as it happens?
I think the market will deal with it as it happens. Obviously, you know, from talking to investors, obviously a liberal NDP minority government, let's say, could cause some grief for individual investors. Perhaps a lot of individuals that I speak to, they've communicated that they're concerned. They're concerned that their taxes will go higher. Mm-hmm. And so that could be something that factors in. But again, I don't think it's going to move markets come Monday morning at 9:30. Perhaps individual investments could move based on campaign promises,
yeah, exactly.
Or certain stocks or companies' shares. But overall, I think the market will take a look at it from, like you said, high up and realize that, you know, we've been in a Liberal government now for a while. And you know, this is how things are. We have a pretty good economy right now. We're growing jobs. We're growing at around a 2% clip. I know we had GDP numbers higher than that this past reading, this past quarter. But I think that was a bit of an anomaly. I think we're more in that 2% range, maybe even a little less than 2%. And I think we'll see that play out in the coming months ahead. So I think overall, that's what the market looks at. We're doing fine here. They're doing fine in the U.S., even though you may hear differently. And I think the markets are just kind of muddling along sideways for now. You really haven't seen much up or down. It's just been kind of range bound for a little bit now.
Kind of slowly eases into something you and I were talking about before, which is basically housing. You hear a lot about mortgage stress tests, housing, how that impacts investing strategy. We have parties out there promising tomorrow they're going to make it a lot easier for, you know, the average Canadian to own a house. Unfortunately, that's kind of like, you know, Dairy Queen saying we're going to give out free ice cream, but we only have 3 gallons of ice cream in the store. You know, if there's no inventory, you can give away whatever you like. There's nothing to buy. You know, so is that kind of conversation helpful? We're going to reduce the stress test. We're going to talk about, you know, taking off some taxes here and there. It doesn't really add up if you look at the figures.
And for me, I look at this as campaign promises. You know, we hear them a lot. We'll hear them in the U.S. over the next year. We've heard a lot of promises here for with regards to our candidates here, whether it's an Andrew Scheer or it's a the Prime Minister, the current Prime Minister, or the NDP.
He's not the Prime Minister right now.
You know, overall, the Liberal leader, let's say. Overall, I think, you know, we're hearing a lot of the promises, the campaign promises. We're hearing individuals talk about how, if they are elected, what they would do, how, you know, what policies they would put into place. But overall, take the stress test. I think the stress tests have actually been, and I might get into trouble with a few of my mortgage friends, mortgage broker friends, but I think the stress tests have been actually very good.
I think so too.
Whenever you have such a hot and heated market,
yes,
as we've had for quite some time, people should realize that if interest rates were to rise, that overall, you know, you have to be able to deal with that. And if you're borrowing at, let's say, 2-3%, you know, if you can't afford a mortgage or to borrow at 5% or 4-5%, then should you be making that or borrowing that kind of money? And so that's what the stress tests are here for. They're saying if interest rates were to rise, you know, 1-2 basis points over the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, can you handle that? And if you can't, then maybe you need to think twice about borrowing
the money.
And there's
a lot of people, especially in this city, in Vancouver, who way overspent on their mortgage, and they can't handle that. I mean, just a couple of months ago, the Bank of Canada saying that interest rates need to be higher, that we need to get a couple of points higher and get them to a comfortable position. I can't remember what their verbiage was. But there were all kinds of people terrified because they could have been facing, especially with the kind of mortgages that are out, you know, just outside this door, you know, an extra $1,000 a month. And especially if you're living in a new house with no furniture, they would have just had to throw their arms up and sell.
Yeah, and a great point. And keep in mind that, you know, overall, people want to own their own homes. This is something that I think everybody believes it's their right. Everybody wants to own. The word rent for many is something that they don't even want to consider. And living in the GTA area here, or living out in BC in the Vancouver area, it's quite expensive to buy your own home. And so what you see is people putting down a very small percentage, yeah, borrowing the rest, and hoping for the best. And I think had we not seen a trade war or tariffs put on by the U.S. president, and I know maybe people might think I'm getting off topic, but I'm really not.
No,
because
I don't think you are.
Prior to that, interest rates were on the rise. It wasn't until we started to see interest rates start to fall due to the uncertainty out there, we started to hear the Federal Reserve thinking about and then cutting interest rates. And now we're wondering, will the Bank of Canada follow suit? So we've seen the 10-year government bond rate fall tremendously. It's now started to pick back up again with some positive news on trade. And so had we not seen the trade war or trade tariffs or escalation of a trade war, we probably would have interest rates a lot higher. Mm. And I believe it's coming. And I think people need to be prepared for that. And these stress tests will prepare people, unfortunately for them, whether they like it or not.
In Britain, they call credit the never never. I'm going to put it on the never never because they fully appreciate that they're going to be dead long before the debt is paid off. And now we have people looking at 30-year mortgages again. What's your thought on that, just out of curiosity?
Well, again, it's another campaign promise. It's something that was done away with to, again, as part of allowing or making people have to consider, can they afford this purchase? Can they consider, can they afford to borrow the money that they're borrowing? And so obviously amortizing it over 30 years, much cheaper than if you had to amortize over less. And so again, it's just another vehicle that was taken away so that people have to look at buying a home and saying, you know, can I afford this property? Does it make sense for me? Or do I need to wait to build up some more funds to be able to make the purchase? So not sure. I think if the conservatives are elected as the minority and or majority, probably minority if they get in, you know, they'll have to really take a hard look at bringing back some of these things like the 30-year mortgage or reducing the stress of the stress test. Because I think promises can be made when you're out there campaigning, but when you get behind the chair, get behind the desk and really have to make those decisions, yeah, you know, there are a lot of consequences that have to be thought of.
This morning on the Sunday Money Show, joined in studio by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. If you'd like to speak with him, his office number 416-332-3863, 416-332-3863. His website, 2Ls, alansmall.com, alansmall.com. You can be part of the conversation, though. Why don't you give us a call here at 416-872-1010, 416-872-1010. Interested in your thoughts, opinions, or any kind of financial questions for that matter. Lines are open, welcoming your calls. And 71010 for the text board, 71010. Regular texting rates apply. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. Good morning. We are live this morning and welcoming your calls at 416-872-1010 on the text board, 71010, 71010. And as always, Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group is here. And Alan, let's get to the phones, shall we? Michael is in Toronto this morning. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I'm a realtor, right? And I do agree with Mr. Small about stress tests is a necessity. But the issue is the whole other side of the financial game people talk about is those second mortgagers, private mortgagers, sorry, the syndicates that come in and still give mortgages at higher rates, greater fees, and, you know, with pretty much on regulation. No regulations going on, or very little, with this private lender market and exploding. People are still buying those houses at more risk themselves, especially when they cannot fulfill their obligations. I do think the stress test is a necessity, but I think the application needs some revision. For example, I don't think if you put 25-30% down, you need a stress test. You got to give people incentives to earn that money, save that money, so they get a break somewhere. I think it's good to do it, but not everything. And also, when people have a mortgage at a bank A, if they can't shop around to bank B at a lower rate,
yep,
without you know being reassessed or stress tested, people through lives have you know lose their jobs or things change, health, whatever, and they can't they can't shop around to get better rates for themselves because if they move even for a lesser interest rate with a certain amount of money, no interest, no increase, they still got to go through the stress test. I think that's wrong.
So you know, Michael,
there's improvements required.
Yeah, no, I think you bring up some really valid points. I think you are correct. This private equity money, that part of the industry has really grown quite substantially. You're seeing many individuals basically building up these pools of money to lend to these individuals that cannot get regular mortgages through the bank. So they are paying a lot higher rates. And to me, that absolutely is, it can be scary, especially if we see a downturn in the real estate. And as I said on BNN earlier this week, you know, different areas of the country as well. You know, it's difficult to paint the whole country with the same brush. Obviously, real estate in Toronto is going to be a lot different than real estate in the prairies, mm-hmm, or northern Ontario or wherever. So difficult to make one rule that applies right across the board. And I think the CEO of National Bank made that comment this past week when he was interviewed. So I think these stress tests should be tweaked. I think they need to be tweaked for certain things as you've brought up. But I think they need to be there for the main purpose, which is to hopefully keep individuals from spending beyond their means and sort of helping them stay out of trouble.
The fly in the ointment for me is being reassessed if you want to move to another bank for a better mortgage rate or whatever. That one just doesn't mathematically add up to me. That's a great example of the law of unintended consequences, because instead of actually being able to save money on my mortgage, I now get reassessed and it's going to cost me more to save money, which is just ludicrous.
Yeah. And as I said, I think there are definitely a number of things that can be or should be perhaps changed depending on which way you look at it. I think the overall intention of these stress tests makes sense, and I can see and understand why they've been put into place. But definitely, I think that they need to be tweaked, and hopefully the next government that comes into power can do some things to help those individuals out there that are struggling to buy their first home or struggling to buy a home, and keep those that perhaps own 2, 3, or 4 homes and use it as an investment vehicle, keep them from really spending beyond their means.
Yeah, and Michael, speaking of real estate, Todd C. Slater waving through the window at us, wanting me to remind you that his Simply Real Estate show moved from Saturdays. They're now on right after this show. So he will be taking to the airwaves with Simply Real Estate just after the noon news. 416-872-1010 is the number. 71010 on the tax board. On the tax board. I am so into this election thing. On the text board. I mentioned off the top of the show how much I enjoy elections and stuff, and I got to admit a very close second is the entire Brexit debacle. I sat there watching the entire debate and the vote yesterday, and are you following it? Or are you, you know, just, I mean, I remember back earlier when it wasn't really such a big deal, you kind of were there when it was there, but now it's just turned into a clown show. My favorite part in the entire thing is the speaker, John Bercow. Ladies and gentlemen, sit down. He's just brilliant. But this is real money, real people, real outcomes. You've got this, the British Prime Minister now sending a note out saying that we would like more time. But if you notice, I didn't sign this note because I don't really believe that. It's craziness.
Yeah, and you don't know what to believe. And again, the uncertainty that's created. This is what the stock market, bringing it back to the markets. This is what the markets do not like.
No.
Uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. So we're now hearing, as you've said, that they may want more time, push the deadline off for now. But then the Prime Minister has said, but we're hoping to maybe get a deal within the first few days of this week, and then we don't need the extension. So you really don't know what's happening. What you can, I guess, figure out is this is not going as smoothly as I'm sure we'd all like, but it never has, right? And so I think from an investment standpoint, and I get this question asked quite often, you know, what about Brexit? Is that going to affect my portfolio? Hmm. And the answer really has been no for quite some time. So because it hasn't affected the market.
Is it still
no? I would still say it's a no. I think that whenever you remove uncertainty, the markets like that had moved higher. So late last week, the markets moved up on a potential Brexit agreement, but then that, I guess, happiness or whatever you want to call it, quickly wore off and the
fizzled.
Markets went fizzled. That's a good
fizzled,
word.
Fizzled, yes.
Fizzled out and the markets went negative again, because really to individual investors sitting here in North America, yes, Brexit is a big deal. It's a big deal for in many different areas and segments of the market, but overall, it's a China-US trade war world. And
let's take a break and talk about that.
Yeah, we
can.
All move based on that.
All right. Order. This is the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. Phone lines are open, 416-872-1010. 416-872-1010. Send us your text comments, 71010. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. Alan Small joining us in studio. 416-872-1010. 416-872-1010. You want to be part of the conversation? Send us a text message, 71010, 71010. Just before the break, we were talking, as we have been talking, for many, many, many months, I guess, about China and the USA. I guess last Friday, the president introduced phase one of a deal that very possibly could be in place. And to be quite honest, I thought there'd be all kinds of backward somersaults and excitement and stuff, but it didn't. Was I wrong? Was there not supposed to be a better reaction to some kind of deal in place?
Well, I think we had a good reaction. The markets were up at the end of the day, up 300. At one point in the U.S., the Dow Jones was up over 500. So I think the idea that, or the announcement that they were going to come to some sort of trade deal, I think started to ripple through the markets and advisors and investors and analysts and economists early on in the day. And when the announcement came at the, what type of deal it was, I think a lot of people were disappointed. The market went, the Dow Jones went up from 500 to only up 300 and change. And we saw a bit of a disappointment. And I guess when you break it down, the way I think of it, this deal, is that the president has agreed to not increase tariffs in October, which he was supposed to on the 15th, and he didn't. And he said he would think about not increasing tariffs in December. And in exchange for that, the Chinese would go out and buy 40 to 50 billion in agricultural products. And that was pretty much it. They said they spoke about intellectual property, IP theft, and all the different things that they've been talking about for quite some time. But really, we didn't hear much in the way of details on that, nor did we hear any details of the existing tariffs, which seem to be causing a lot of issues now for American businesses and really businesses all around the world. Those will remain in place. And I think that, to me, is the reason why the markets haven't really gotten too excited yet, because these tariffs have definitely affected global growth, growth in the U.S., growth here in our country. You know, we're seeing a manufacturing recession in the U.S., and that is strictly, in my opinion, based on the trade war.
Yes,
and now we're hearing we just got some really weak retail sales numbers in the U.S. as well. So these tariffs are really starting to take hold. And if the tariffs that are to be implemented in December, they actually get put on, I think they would just make things even worse than they are now. And so I think a trade deal has to be done. I think phase one, whatever they're calling it, will go through. But I'm hopeful that, and I hope, and I think many people are hopeful for phase two and three or whatever it's going to be called to come very soon after that, because these businesses in the U.S. Are starting to say that tariffs are starting to affect them and that things are definitely looking weaker.
But on Thursday, you had China swinging back, saying that it is open to this partial deal, but they also said that all tariffs must be lifted on its exports to the United States to end this trade dispute. Again, unfortunately, it sounds to me like the president with the bestest, everest, greatest deal known to man. And, you know, you look at this thing and it just doesn't stand up.
Not yet anyways. And I've said this a number of times. I don't believe that the U.S. has the upper hand in this trade war. No. I don't think any China or the U.S. Has the upper hand. I think they both need a deal. We're seeing Chinese GDP or Chinese growth numbers. They were just released this week down to 6%. Lowest we've seen in years. And we know, as I said, what's going on in the U.S., how growth is slowing as well. And obviously this is rippling or having ripple effects in Europe, in Asia. We're still seeing good markets or good growth here in our country, but make no mistake, when our neighbors to the south catch a cold or sneeze, we tend to catch a cold. Yes. So I would imagine that as we see growth numbers come down in the U.S., our growth numbers will probably follow. Our exports will probably come down and we'll run into some issues down the road. And that's why many predict the Bank of Canada may start to lower rates at some point down the road. So I think the U.S., I think China, and I think the world needs a trade deal. And I'm still positive or at least optimistic that one will happen. It's just going to be dragged out, it seems like, in a number of phases. And let's face it, it might be good for the president to drag it out in a number of phases.
I think so,
you know,
too.
Getting that agricultural purchase up front of 40 to 50 billion, he does well for the farmers, perhaps maybe earns a few votes in the upcoming election. And I think that goes a long way for him. So it's not surprising to me that this is the way everything is playing out.
Seems like this insurmountable mountain right now, this trade deal. Do you think that maybe we're likely to see smaller deals made, you know, that will cumulatively come up to a deal as opposed to this huge, you know, the United States and China have settled all their differences. Everything is good and let's move forward. It seems too big to happen.
Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. And that's why, you know, the president, instead of saying one deal, two deals, three deals, he's saying phase one, two, and three. So I think he's come to the realization that he has to do it this way, that they're not going to get everything done in one shot, that they'll start here, you know, perhaps get a deal with what is already or has been already agreed upon, and then we'll work to come to an agreement with the other things that are or seems to be so difficult to agree on.
Yeah, and I mentioned before that I think the president kind of painted himself into a corner talking about how China, you know, is worried that, or is not worried. They figure that if there's a Democrat president elected next year, that it's going to be easier for them. He kind of indicated there that there's a weakness. He's supposed to say that he will be the president next year. It will happen. And if you go by his logic, yeah, China doesn't seem so sure. That's a given.
Yeah, and right now, I guess the one of the Democratic candidates, Elizabeth Warren, you know, she's come out and with a very hard stance against China. So even if the current president isn't reelected, I'm not so sure the Democratic candidate or electee will be any softer or any easier on China. So I think a deal needs to be made as soon as possible. Not only for that reason, but also we're seeing weakness, and this weakness is gathering steam. And I always say, like a herd of elephants, once it goes in one direction, very hard to stop and move back in the other direction. And so, you know, it's a testament to the U.S. economy that it's taken this long for us to see the effects of these trade tariffs and trade war. But we're now definitely seeing it. There's no doubt about that. And I know the administration has commented on that as well.
What about the average person who walks into Alan Small's office, sits down on the couch, grabs a coffee, and sits there for a couple of minutes waiting to walk into your office? How does this affect the average? Like, we're way off on, you know, U.S. politics and Brexit and stuff like this. The conversations we've had in this segment alone, how does it affect that person sitting in your office waiting to talk to you?
Well, from the people that have communicated to me or spoken to me over the past, well, let's call it last 12 months, I think for the most part, they are concerned. They are nervous. They are concerned about the decisions that the current administration in Washington, the decisions that they're making, and they're concerned going forward. What if this trade war continues? What if it escalates? And I think for them, they are you know, quite nervous. And unfortunately, though, when you talk to individuals and when they need to grow their wealth, grow their portfolio, and I've used this acronym before, TINA, there is no alternative. And so, unfortunately, not being in the market, you're looking at making, you know, a couple of percent. We know inflation's a couple of percent. Then you got to pay tax on that money that you've made, whether it's interest or dividends or capital gains. And so outside of investing in the markets, there really isn't a vehicle to grow your wealth. Right. And so one individual after the next, they come to the realization that 2% isn't enough. They move into the market. Now they want to be into something perhaps that pays a dividend or some income to help cushion things if the markets were to fall. And that's a great, idea or something that you want to get into. But overall, I think individuals, especially the ones I'm talking to, have come to the realization they have to still be in this market. And how can they do it is the question. And that's what I'm there for, to build a portfolio for them, to diversify, to play offense when we can play offense, and to definitely play defense when that's called
for. That's a great point, you know, because amid all the conversations we're having, there is still money to be made out there. You know, you're a hockey guy. The team can still win if it has the right coach.
That's right. And I think this year, especially more so than ever that I can remember, because of the volatility, because of the negativity, because of all the back and forth, whether it's Brexit, whether it's China, U.S., you name it, individuals, feel that this year has been a difficult year, when in fact, the markets are less than 2% from all-time highs. And individual investors have had a fantastic year if they've been invested since January 1 to present day, and if they've been in the equity market. So overall, it may feel like it's been a difficult year, but it's been a very good year when you look at the numbers. And at the end of the day, that's what we do. We got to look at the numbers, take emotion out of it, stick with the numbers, and that's what the job of the investment advisor is.
Take a break, and when we come back, we're going to answer some of your text questions, including ETFs versus individual stocks. Which one? We'll go with that first. But there's a whole lot more coming up as the Sunday Money Show continues here on News Talk 1010. I'm Ian Grant, joined in studio by Alan Small from the Alan Small Financial Group. Give him a call today. Get your money working for you. 416-332-3863. 416-332-3863. 1-800-963-8863. The Allen Small Financial Group, lots more, all the information, contact information, and more at his website, 2LsAllenSmall.com. You're listening to the Sunday Money Show here on News Talk 1010. We will get back to more with Allen Small, but first at 11:45, News Talk 1010, Time Saver Traffic.
Well, if you're heading north of the city towards the Keswick area, northbound on the 404, right at the end of the highway where it approaches the join up with Woodbine Avenue there, we have a crash in the left lane. Just watch for it. A bit of delay once you're past Newmarket. Now on Young and York Mills, we have a crash in town. That's in the city's north end. Problems came and went in Thornhill on Dufferin south of Centre Street. We had York Regional Police clear that up. Of course, the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon closing off several roads downtown, including Bay Street, stretches between Queen and Albert, and also between Queen and Lakeshore, but also Lakeshore in its entirety pretty much closed from the Park Lawn area all the way through to Dawn Roadway for the marathon. Leaves are falling, and so are Leon's prices. And during Leon's Falling Prices event, you'll find incredible savings throughout Leon's showroom. Limited time only. See leons.ca for details. I'm Jody Thornton. This is Toronto's breaking news, traffic, and weather. Your next update at noon on News Talk 1010.
And speaking of noon, by the way, Todd C. Slater's Simply Real Estate Show moves to Sundays at noon. So you can catch that right after traffic at the end of this show. This is the Sunday Money Show. I'm Ian Grant, joined in studio by Allen Small from the Allen Small Financial Group. Allen, going into the break, I suggested people check out your website for all the contact information, pictures of yours truly, you know, or you, not me, but you, and a whole lot more. Tell us a little bit about you, the company, and what people can find on the website. Because it really is a good resource.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my name is Allen Small. I'm a senior investment advisor of the Allen Small Financial Group, which is part of Hollis Wealth, Industrial Alliance Company, Industrial Alliance Securities Company. And our goal simply, as I say every week on the show, every other week on the show, is to help individual investors obtain their financial goals. And I guess, you know, the individuals that come into my office or meet me and we talk on a regular basis, what they like to hear is that we monitor portfolios on a regular basis, that we're in contact with our clients on a regular basis. I know for many, that's not something that they receive, that ongoing support or service or there to answer their questions. So when they know that their advisor is there to help them out and is contacting them on a regular basis, I think that's what people like. And the second point we talk about, part of the Allen Small difference, is building portfolios to meet the needs of that specific investor. And so when someone comes in to meet us, they communicate what they're looking for, what they want, what their goals are, their time horizon is, and we build a portfolio for them, tailored for them, their own mutual fund, if you will, from scratch. And we do that based on what's happening today, not based on some, you know, prearranged portfolio that we built perhaps many weeks ago, but something that we're going to build today. And so I think that's what individual investors like most about what we do. And as I said, we're there to help and try to help people get to where they want to be in life.
2LsAllenSmall.com. Check out the text board. We're going to do some of your messages as well. You want to give us a shout on the phone lines? We'll take your calls. 416-872-1010. Text us 71010. And here we go. Allen, exchange traded funds versus individual stocks. How do I decide?
Well, that's a good question. And I don't think it's a one or other type of scenario. I think it depends on the type of investor. It depends on who they're using to help them, whether they're doing it themselves or whether they're using the advice of an investment advisor. But ETFs are basically baskets of stocks, let's say, or they could be baskets of bonds and so forth. They like mutual funds, but for the most part, still, I know there's some actively managed ETFs, they exist today, but for the most part, these ETFs are just an index. So let's say you buy a financials ETF. So in this ETF, there will be a bunch of bank stocks, for example. And that index is pretty much chosen up front, and the individual investor will know what that ETF, what's inside of it, and they'll either put their money in there or not. Whereas a mutual fund, there's a manager there that is actively managing the fund on a regular basis. They could take certain investments in, out of the product on a regular basis. So you're really, when you buy a mutual fund, you're buying the abilities of that manager. So that's how I would differentiate the two. But both of them can be and should be part of a diversified portfolio. You could use mutual funds or ETFs to gain exposure to parts of the world that perhaps you don't have exposure to, whether it's Asia, Europe, et cetera. And, you know, with a mutual fund, you are relying on the expertise of the person making those decisions, just like, I guess, for the most part, for the ETF. But ETF, more index-based, a lot of them are still passively managed and there is no person making those decisions, not picking winners and losers, let's say.
Here's an interesting one. Alan, what are your thoughts on socially responsible investing?
Well, you know, you don't hear about that too often. I have come across individual investors that don't want to invest in a certain segment of the market. Let's say they don't like tobacco companies or oil companies. You tend to get that from time to time. So you have to go out and build a portfolio that that meets the needs of your investor. And there are some mutual funds out there that are based solely on this type of idea. And so, again, you want to pick the ones that you think are managed the best if they're mutual funds, or you want to pick the investments that are that will work for that investor the best to your ability. But that's really what it is. And so you can be socially responsible and still have a very good performing portfolio. You know, we do it all the time. So it's something that from time to time you hear, but for the most part, most individual investors, they'll come in and they'll say, you know, they're open to anything. They just want to reach their financial goals.
Alan, I'm one of the investors who are nervous at the moment. What should I be doing to protect my portfolio?
Well, again, it comes down to, are you in the equity markets? Are you in the stock market, real estate market? Or are you in the fixed income market? What is your time horizon? What are your risk tolerances? And I think once we have that conversation, we can build a portfolio or manage a portfolio to meet your needs. Number one thing for every portfolio, and we talk about it all the time, and it's the word probably most used in investing, diversification. And diversification is the cheapest way to protect a portfolio at this time. And so someone who's nicely diversified across different geographical regions of the world, different segments of the marketplace, offensive investments versus defense investments, ones that produce dividends versus ones that are more for growth, I think that is the best recipe for success, especially if you're building a portfolio that is for growth, that is in the markets. But of course, you know, you want to look at different asset classes as well. A number of my portfolios that I build have a little bit of bonds in it, have a little bit of real estate trusts, have a little bit of stocks, have a little bit of everything in it. And so when one is not performing, hopefully the other segments of the portfolio will. And I think that's the best way to approach it.
Here's one of those neat snatch this pebble from my palm questions. Why is it that whenever there's a crash in the market, people always say, I could see this coming, when I never hear them say it? And they also say, this time it's different, and it's never different. It always goes up.
And that's a great question. And I always tell people, my crystal ball isn't working today. And so I wish it was. If it was working full time, I think, I might be somewhere else in the world right now, maybe on a beach and having a drink and watching the sun go down. But you know, we don't have that crystal ball. And for those that come on radio or TV or wherever, or you talk to them in an office and they say, oh, we knew that was going to happen. Well, you know, I would be concerned about that. I don't think anybody knows exactly what's going to happen. We use history as an indicator as to what's going to happen, perhaps happen going forward. And history is our best way to figure out what's going to happen in the future. And that's really what we go by. And when someone says this time is different, well, we can always find a point in history where something that's happening present happened in the past. And that's what we do. So we figure out, for example, the president is facing this impeachment process. So you know, if the president were to be impeached, what would happen? So what do? We go back in time and figure out, well, when President Clinton was on the hot seat and also going through this something similar, what happened to the markets then? When President Nixon went through impeachment, what happened then? And so we use previous or history to tell us what's going to happen going forward. And that's, as I said, that's the best way to do it if we are going to make predictions and figure out what to invest in.
You mentioned off the top of the show, we're now into the fourth quarter of the year, and there's an interesting message here. Now that we are in the fourth quarter of the year, should I be checking on my portfolio? Is once per quarter enough? I guess their question is, how involved should they be?
And this, I think, it's kind of an individual thing. Some clients of mine look at their portfolios daily, some monthly, some quarterly, and some just, you know, rely, for example, on me to let them know when something needs to be done. So I think it really depends on the individual themselves, how often they want to look at their portfolio. And I think it's the job of the investment advisor to be on top of everyone's portfolio, their clients' portfolios, and be in contact with their clients on a regular basis. As we talk about here, I'm in contact with my clients on a regular basis. We want to say, you know, be in contact with them 6 to 8 weeks. So when you take that out over the course of a year, you're looking at, you know, 6 to 8 times a year, perhaps, Is that enough? Well, it'll depend on how the market is performing, how the market is behaving, how volatile things are, and how often we need to be in contact with our clients or how often our clients contact us. You know, it's obviously a two-way street. We want our clients to call in if they have any concerns and not wait for us to be in touch with them all the time.
Were you surprised last week by the mixed news from IBM?
I was hoping for better. IBM is a position in my portfolios that I've had for a little while now. They pay a fantastic dividend, and they've had so many quarters of negative growth, and this past quarter was no exception. Mm. We saw negative growth again, but I think many believe that with their recent acquisition of Red Hat, which is a cloud company that does business in the cloud, hybrid cloud as they call it, that we're hoping that IBM can turn the corner with artificial intelligence. Now they're growing a bit into the cloud. These are the parts of their business that can really take off and replace some of their legacy business, which isn't doing as well.
And they're only, 12 years late on that move? So good luck to them. We are almost out of time. You got 30 seconds. Tell us about Alan Small and the Alan Small difference.
Well, as I said earlier, my name is Alan Small. I'm a senior investment advisor of the Alan Small Financial Group, which is part of Hollis Wealth. Alan Small difference, simply put, is we like to, you know, when we meet our clients, we like to be in touch with them on a regular basis. We are there to build portfolios that make sense for them. That portfolios that we build are from scratch. We build specifically tailored portfolios to meet the needs of the person sitting across the table from us. And that's what we do. And that's what people like. And that's what people want. They don't want to be lumped in with the masses and everybody else. They want somebody to watch out for their needs. And that's what we do.
We are out of time. Thank you, as always.
Thank you.
Alan Small, if you would like to reach him, his office number 416-332-3863. 416-332-3863. His website, 2LsAlanSmall.com. I'm Ian Grant. I'm back at 1 o'clock with Howard Levitt and Employment Law. Todd C. Slater waiting in the wings right now for Simply Real Estate coming up next here on News Talk 1010.